Blog Talk Radio.
I'm a truth terrorist. I'm a knowledge gangster. I'm a black history hitman. I'm a lie killer, urban gorilla. I gotta be a roughneck.
Free the Black Panthers, FCBP. Stand for free the Black Panthers. And fuck the black police. That 13th Amendment, trying to make a slave of me. You can lock my body, can't trap my mind, not forever be free.
Okay,
free the Black Panthers, FCBP. Stand for free the Black Panthers, and fuck the black police. Feds infiltrated our movements for black leadership roles. But we still here, finna build here, fuck coin sale, bro.
Show.
They got me started, lying hearted, I'm the new Mufasa. And I'm all about Umoja, first in Gruz Usaba. Let's bring back the black families, we need our father. Single mama, son and daughter, that's root of the problem. Wise up, we wise up, unity so powerful. Black banks, black schools, black owned, black power moves. You telling lies, you think this shit gon' be televised. Black power, be scared guys, that be standing there like they paralyzed, huh? We say fuck the system, cause we above the system. We keep ARs and pistols, shotguns that's worth the crystal. But that's for self-defense, make sure we have no issues. Be sure to leave it at the door if you have it with you. This for them freedom fighters, that lost their freedom. Until they freedom, we screaming carpe diem. This for the general, King Khalid Muhammad. We gon' make your day a holiday, I fucking promise. Free the Black Panthers, FCBP. Stand for free the Black Panthers, and fuck the black police. That 13th Amendment, tryna make a slave of me. You can lock my body, can't trap my mind, not forever be free.
Okay,
free the Black Panthers, FCBP. Stand for free the Black Panthers, and fuck the black police. Feds infiltrated our movements for black leadership roles. But we still here, finna build here, fuck coin sale, bro.
RBG, 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 RBG. My sisters, my brothers, the council, the elders, shit, that's really all I need. We suited, we booted, don't do it, you stupid, we head to the armory. Black woman and goddess, regardless, my heart just don't fuck with misogyny. Bullshit, I don't tolerate it. Melanated, so you gotta hate it. Barack fucked up another conversation. Trump finna get inaugurated, damn. Unify or die, NBPP.org.
First and foremost, the new Black Panther Party, no other Black Panther Party, we are not violent. We are for self-defense and self-determination. The most violent group in this country are the police. What is taking place by the police department to black people across this country is ethnic cleansing and genocide. It has escalated since the day that Barack Obama was inaugurated in 2008. We have a people who are only 13% of the population, yet we make up 80% of the prisons. We have 50% unemployment rate in the black community, and it's actually even more than that because they're not counting our people that are in the prison. The 13th Amendment says you cannot be made a slave or indentured servant unless you commit a crime. The 14th Amendment forced our people to be subjects of this government. We never had any say in that. We need our own nation.
Talk to him, Dr. Clark.
He called for the unity and the redemption of the African world.
Salute them, Honorable Marcus
Garvey. We were not ready to listen then.
They might not have been ready then.
There's wonder whether we are ready.
Ain't no doubt about it.
To listen.
We ready, baby.
Now.
Let's go. Yeah, 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 yeah.
Flag fly high. Woo! Flag fly high. Flag fly high. Black fist in the sky with the side to side. It's the flag fly high.
Colors forever, Garvey would never die. On my 90, the throne ready.
niggas for the gods, melanating and elevating, holding the main charge. The green is for the cradle, Africa everything first, the earth's navel. This excellency, put it together as a symbol of liberation. That's how we get the medals, RBG.
Out. All black everything. Black woman, black hip, yeah. Black kiss, black lip, yeah. Afro with a black pick, okay. Love when you talk that black ish. Black man, black fist, yeah. Black gat, black grip, yeah. Backlash on the black, okay. Lip. Still gonna talk that black ish. Black man, black clan, black people, black land. Cash changed, only black hands. Black businesses, black man, black bank, black dollars, black schools, black scholars, black doctors, black lawyers, black inventors, black farmers, black salons, black parlors, black designers, black garments, black stage, black performance, black panel, black audience, black mother, black father, black son, black daughter, black love, black honor, black today, black tomorrow, black woman, black hip, yeah. Black kiss, black lip, yeah. Afro with a black, okay. Pick, love when you talk that black, okay. Dish, black man, black fist, word. Black gat, black grip, yeah. Backlash on the black lip, right. Still gonna talk that black, okay. Dish, black God, black Jesus, black face, black features, black race, black people, black face, black Easter, black leather, black parade, black shotguns, black AKs, black solutions, black answers, black power, black panthers, black God, black Jesus, black face, black features, black race, black people, black face, black Easter, black leather, black parade, black shotguns, black AKs, black solutions, black answers, black power, black panthers, black woman, black hip, yeah. Black kiss, black lip, yeah. Afro with a black, okay. Pick, love when you talk that black dish, black man, black fist, yeah. Black gat, black grip, yeah. Backlash on the black, okay. Lip, still gonna talk that black dish, black man, black plan, black people, black land, cash and change, only black hands, black business, black man, black bank, black dollar, black school, black scholar, black doctor, black lawyer, black inventor, black farmer, black salon, black parlor, black designer, black garment, black stage, black appointment, black panel, black audience, black mother, black father, black son, black daughter, black love, black honor, black today, black tomorrow, black woman, black hair, black kiss, black lip, Afro with a black pick, love when you talk that black, okay. Kiss, black man, black fist, word, black gat, black grip, backlash on the black lip, still gonna talk that black, okay. Kiss.
The moment that is bound to shape the future. I got a letter from the government. The other day, I opened and read it. They telling me to get it. It said that the message I was bringing brought destruction. I put the pants in the bag and said, fuck them. Here's a land that never gave a damn about a brother like me from the jump. They'd rather see me slump. Face down, shot 5 or 6 times with my kid and my mama in the cop car brown. And I'm done. Stop lying. It's a black and white thing. Redneck ass judge would rather watch a nigga hang than indict what's white. Not right. Fuck a news feed. Black man got the same needs as the Jews need. Who me? I demand reparation. Fuck a cowboy. I'm a native rather of my nation. I'm an African. Black man. Fuck down my language. Got me praying to a white boy God. That's insane. And if you ask me why they steadily harass me, I reply with that these motherfuckers nasty. And I'm a god, yet they calling me a nigga. They scared of me, so they try to hide behind the trigger, acting badass. Fuck a honky with the badge. I'm a nigga with an attitude. You can kiss my black ass. Ain't no sense in niggas being diplomatic. Televise the revolution, let these motherfuckers have it. I'm calling up the homies, they said to come through. And I run with the niggas, they scared to come shoot. Take an eye for an eye, take a tooth for tooth. Do unto others as them others would do all to you. And all they say is make America great. What America hates, kept America straight and America safe. Motherfuck that flag. My people are not free, we wanna touch that flag. So quick to try to copyright what came for free. Now they blaming me, and it's plain to see that they mad at that. Like I'm a magic act, yeah, imagine that. Motherfucker, I'm black, fucking vultures. Super quick to steal one's culture, trying to make it your own. Caveman, go home. Over 10 long nose, funny looking ass Donald. Got his nerve disrespecting President Obama. If you don't want us around, then let us leave. Pay the money you've been owing my people since they were set free. That 40 acres and a mule never came, but yet we're still outstanding. Outstanding in the rain, just waiting, patient, pacing, and praying for God to step up. But now it ain't shit shaking. I was mistaken, thinking scripture could have helped us. Following the faith of our very own oppressors. No justice, just us. Look at how the aftermath of slavery today still affects us. Our kids educated by the enemy, and they don't know shit about their history. Cause they ain't teaching that in school. Leave it up to them coons, and all that's cool. Let the bygones be bygones. And besides, we've been killing off our homes. Shut the fuck up, you know what? Uncle Tom, house nigga, slaves, see they motherfucking nuts cut. I pack steel in the hour of the chaos. If black lives still don't matter till you stay out.
RBGs. You know what I mean? It's war. You know what I mean? Yo, Stick. You know what I mean? Shit be real on war. The block. Pigs be out there, occupied army. RBGs, it's a takeover, not a makeover. Yeah. The cops stop you just because you black, that's war. Run you through the system for your prince, that's war. When they call my hood a drug zone, that's war. Slumlord charging you for rent, that's war. Why they so rich and we poor, that's war. If you young and black, you sell crack, that's war. The White House is the rock house, that's war. George Bush coming out his mouth, that's war. Chilling on the corner with your gang, that's war. Popo do the same damn thing, that's war. When they murdered I'ma do the yellow, that's war. Marching in the streets is a strategy of war. Knowing self-defense is a strategy of war. Soldiers try to link with other soldiers in the war. Revolutionaries got to know the art of war. War, what about hip-hop? Use that. Matter of fact, fuck a rap battle. What about a gap battle? Let's take it to the beast and see which cat tattle. Is it kids versus beans or B versus ho? What about y'all real niggas against the 5-0? This is M1, DP, don't you forget. Cause you can talk, 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 but that don't mean shit. I ain't gotta pop your top to see where your brains went. This rap shit is way bigger than entertainment. It's the people versus the pigs when it all goes down. It's not pop versus big, it's who's getting the power. And power ain't money, dog, it's self-determination. Like taking hot and making it the real people station, that's war. Know what I mean? Yeah, rap war, whatever war, you live a fast life, more or less, more so, it's still war. Dead prayers, the people radio, yeah. Get down, get down, get down, RBGZ, biatch.
You are now listening to WRBG, the people's radio. It's a takeover, not a makeover.
Ah, and yes, Welcome once again to Al Tibalon News with your combat reporter, Brother Tutmos Sankara, here with you live this evening. And what I would like to do this evening is give you a political treatise. They present to you a volume of information that is absolutely pertinent and vital in the African revolutionary struggle in the United States. I talk of no other volume except Maroon the Implacable. Maroon the Implacable is a book written by now former political prisoner Russell Maroon Schultz. And in this treatise, it is a set of writings. And within this set of writings, there are tidbits of information and strategies that one can use when one is in the field. And just to begin, I'd like to just to give you an analysis of what type of framework we're talking about in regards to Comrade Elder Russell Maroon Schultz's thinking. And shout out to Russell Maroon III, shout out to Comrade Sister Teresa Schultz also, and the whole Schultz family. The foreword to Maroon the Implacable is "To the Outer World from Within, the Ferocity to Be Free." And if you don't know, Maroon is called Maroon because he escaped from folk three times. Get on down, you know. And that's why they call him the Maroon, because, of course, we know Maroons were runaways. So he garnered that nomenclature. The first chapter, Introduction, the Revolutionary Maroon. Then there's Prelude, Fire in the Hole, Why Russell Maroon Schultz is Important to Creative Revolutionaries, by Fred Hope. About these writings, Author's Note, by Russell Maroon. I Am Maroon. Then there's Message from a Death Camp. There's 21st Century Political Prisoners, Real and Potential, written in 2002. Taxpayers in Prison, A Fool's Paradise, 2011. Death by Regulation, Pennsylvania Control Unit Abuses, from 95. And the one that we'll begin with this evening is the Black Liberation Struggle. There's the Black Liberation Struggle in Philadelphia from 2006, and then we'll begin this evening with Black Fighting Formations, Their Strength, Weaknesses, and Potential, written between 94 and 95. Also, there's The Dragon and the Hydra, a historical study of organizational methods. We'll go on to that as a follow-up. The Real Resistance to Slavery in North America from 2005. Liberation or Gangsterism, Freedom or Slavery. We'll go over that also this evening. That is from 2006. Respect Our Mothers, Stop Hating Women, from 2010 by Russell Maroon. Democracy, Matriarchy, Occupy Wall Street, and Food Security, 2011. That was an awesome essay. He broke all that stuff down about the Occupy movement and all of that. The Question of Violence, from 2012. And afterward, Let Us Not Rest Until Justice Is Done. And as an appendix, a summary of the case, Russell Maroon Schultz, More Than 20 Years in Solitary Confinement, Appendix 2, Manifesto for Scientific Soul Sessions, which is the political education sessions that Russell Maroon suggested. And then there's Appendix 3, Eco-Socialist Horizons. That is a awesome essay also, one that's near and dear to me. Being an environmentalist myself, being very close to the earth. But we want to go into this Black Fighting Formations. In my last live, I included that within a larger set of volumes, well, with these or other books in a political education study. But I wanted to hone in on Maroon because the things that he gives us are very pertinent to now. Then we'll be moving up in that political analysis, moving to revolutionary warfare and techniques and things of that nature. But Maroon says, a study of the various political organizations in the United States between the years of 1960 and 1994 will reveal a number of fighting formations. These formations were usually subdivisions or offshoots of larger organizations, which were not primarily envisioned as combat groups. This lack of original dedication to a fighting mission would go a long way in helping to explain their strengths, weaknesses, and potentials. Not included in this study are the non-political black fighting formations found among the street gangs or those dedicated to criminal activity. However, mention will be made of them in regard to the loss of potential that black political fighting formations originally had. We must look to Sun Tzu and Karl von Clausewitz for the most concise writings on the philosophy of warfare, the ultimate reason for engaging in it, and its main dynamic controlling its many variables. The Art of War and On War are mentioned by military practitioners around the world as two of the best tried and true volumes available on the subject. There have been many outstanding military practitioners of African descent as well. Tutmosis III, who he says is the first imperial conquerors, Ramses II and Ramses III, consistent subduers of the barbarian established holders of Europe and Asia, Queen of England and Queen Candace of Angola and Ethiopia, respectively, Shaka Zulu, Toussaint, Antonio Maceo, who outled and outfought vastly superior European armies in Haiti and in Cuba. Finally, we must add the outstanding guerrilla leaders among the Maroons and the African anti-colonial fighters. Although guerrilla warfare is often sufficient, it must be kept in mind that guerrilla warfare is only a subdivision of and sometimes a forerunner to total war. And he'll go into that total war later on. Despite the successes of these African warriors, there is very little written work available about them. Thus, we must rely on the work of Sun Tzu and Karl von Clausewitz. Sun Tzu, in his Art of War instructs, war is a matter of vital importance to the state. It is the province of life and death and the road to survival or ruin. It is mandatory that it be studied thoroughly in On War. Karl von Clausewitz states, war is an extension of politics by different means. Both of these authors demonstrate the connection between politics and warfare and the relative importance of both. Politics here is simply the science and art of governing people. It follows that those who are involved in shaping political affairs must recognize that they will, at some point, be required to pursue their political objectives by different means. As the road to survival or ruin, as Sun Tzu says. Warfare. For the revolutionary, warfare cannot be a haphazard or belated consideration, as ignoring these principles, nonviolent pacifism, will ultimately lead to total destruction. Therefore, all of our black political organizations should have had a military component right from the beginning. From the inception, it would have been the mission of these military components to study and prepare for war. This presupposes that the political and military leadership is sagacious enough to discern both the long-range interests of their people and the potential conflicts that they will invariably encounter by pursuing these interests. In other words, our black political organizations should have known right from the beginning that they had to build a military component capable of defending our people from the attacks they were undergoing as a result of working to free themselves from oppression. Sadly, this was not the case. In order to understand better what must be done now, we need to learn from the mistakes of the past. When 1960 dawned, there were no black fighting formations, with the exception of the Nation of Islam's paramilitary wing known as the Fruit of Islam. This was formed largely in response to Malcolm X's tireless efforts. However, the Fruit of Islam was completely dedicated to internal security and static defense of the nation's leadership and property. It was further hobbled in qualitative development by the group's unwillingness to become actively involved in the civil rights struggle, where most of the action was taking place. Members of the Fruit of Islam were not much better than department store security guards, far removed from the reality of total war. Subsequent events would expose his weaknesses. To his credit, however, the Fruit of Islam had perfected a method of recruiting, organizing, and training to the extent that training was done, that is unparalleled to this day. The secret of its success rested on the fact that it concentrated its main recruiting efforts among the most downtrodden segments of the community, the drug addicts, prison inmates, prostitutes, and destitute poor. It took a great effort to recruit and organize these people, but once they were fully brought into the organization, they became steadfast and loyal members of their new psychological family. By the time the Nation of Islam had fished them out of the mud, they had no other family that would stand by them, as they had burnt their bridge as well. These recruits were kept under extremely close supervision and were always provided with the means to acquire food, clothing, shelter, security, and entertainment, with usually social fellowship and religious chapters. The fruit of Islam provided everything that a functioning family would provide its members. The organization itself had a nationalist founding program, but no grand strategy to achieve any of its ends. The first dictum of war: war is a matter of vital importance to the state, and it's mandatory that it be studied thoroughly, was not observed. This statement is not just a matter of opinion. Events have proven this to be true. It does not take long to build military capability. You hear me? Of course, the organization has not had a free ride, as it continues to fight the government's infiltration and manipulation in addition to the petty jealousies and rivalries that exist among leaders. Nevertheless, it's clear that with a few exceptions, this group of Islam has thus far missed the boat when it comes to being an important black fighting formation. The Civil Rights Movement was launched in 1965 with the Montgomery bus boycott and quickly spread throughout the South, in addition to many local groupings, which in some cases had already been active in their community. A number of other organizations began to emerge on the national scene by 1960. SCLC, CORE, SNCC, NAACP had been around since the early 1900s. From 55 to 65, all the major actions taking place in the black freedom struggle occurred in the South, and the aforementioned organization led these struggles. Each of these organizations professed nonviolence as their strategy, but ultimately relied on someone else's armed force to protect them, usually that of the U.S. government, with disastrous results. These groups were called ahead to the FBI and alert them to their plans, requesting protection. The FBI, in turn, would contact members of the local police force, who were often called carrying Ku Klux Klan, or would contact their undercover agent operatives in the Klan, who would subsequently organize a shooting, burning, bombing, or killing. These organizations were violating every rule in the art of war. Instead of observing the rule, destroy your enemy and preserve yourself, they were actually aiding their enemy in their own destruction. This exact pattern was repeated to one degree or another when the government provided U.S. Marshals or federal troops. Despite this short-sighted, cowardly, and disastrous strategy because of the heroic sacrifices made by rank and file, largely black men, women, and children, a number of changes were forced through during this period of time. And here's where it gets important. The Monroe County, North Carolina, NAACP branch was headed by a black man named Robert F. Williams, who saw clearly on that his chapter of the NAACP would suffer countless casualties and could not survive unless they got rid of the nonviolent approach and adopted an armed self-defense strategy. This brother strongly advocated that all blacks in the United States should adopt armed self-defense. Williams walked his talk, as his Monroe County NAACP branch was both armed and trained. Because of this, his members survived a number of shootouts with the local KKK, citizens and police. Unfortunately, he could not affect any widespread acceptance of his methods, and his chapter was therefore isolated. After a so-called kidnapping of some white people, he was forced to leave the country. He continued his work while in exile by traveling throughout Africa and visiting China and other things. At the same time, an organization called Beacon for Defense and Justice was formed in both rural Alabama and Mississippi. Unlike Williams, Monroe County chapter of Beacon for Defense and Justice was not a subdivision of the NAACP. Rather, it was an offshoot and therefore and autonomous from the National Nonviolent Leadership. The Deacons recruited, organized, and trained solely from this perspective. Because of this, they were more sophisticated than any other part-time militant black organization during the civil rights struggle. For instance, the Deacons provided a tightly organized security and communications net around some of the most important civil rights marches. While the civil rights group provided their posted marshals with armbands, the Deacons had roving patrols armed with automatic rifles. After a few skirmishes and firefights with Klan and Knight Rider, part Klan who were afraid to show their faces during the day, they gave the Deacons a wide berth. Ultimately, however, the Deacons had a circumscribed potential for growth due to the civil rights movement's overall strategy of reliance on U.S. government protection. So even though you had good protection, the best protection, the Deacons for Defense never lost a battle. You still rely on the government. We're only laying out these strategies, analysis of different fighting formations. Rural Mississippi had also made believers out of young SNCC cadre. SNCC had started Mississippi Freedom Summer Campaign in 1964 as nonviolent activists. After experiencing the death of several of their comrades and supporters in the raw terror that the police and Klan and the Knight Riders inspired, all of the SNCC cadre had armed themselves by the time they left Mississippi. SNCC leader Israel Brown was arrested when a rifle and banana clips were found in his luggage after a fight in Mississippi. SNCC eventually changed his name from Student Nod to the Student National Coordinate Committee, dropping the nonviolent description. Yet it was too little too late, as the momentum was already shifting to the cities of the North and West. SNCC's last effort in 1965 was to organize the Lowndes County Freedom Organization, whose emblem was a Black Panther with no direct association with the Black Party. Well, there was a direct association because Brother Kwame Ture went there at Huey and Bobby's request. The Lowndes County Freedom Party organization adopted armed self-defense from the beginning. Although they experimented with the slogan Black Power, they did not make any far-reaching progress as their political goal was still civil rights. The 1965 Watts Rebellion in California was the signal that the momentum in the black struggle was shifting to the city. Within 2 years, a number of rebellions occurred in other major cities and small towns. This was a qualitatively different situation. Rather than peaceful demonstrations seeking to acquire civil rights, these events were massive and widespread rebellions. Watts, 34 dead. New York, Philly, Birmingham, and Newark, 26 dead. Detroit, 43 dead. And in each case, there were hundreds wounded with massive property damage. The keen political observer could not miss the parallel between these rebellions and those that had preceded revolutions and armed struggles in other countries. But guess what was missing from this equation? No urban-based black political groups had armed components. There were no black fighting formations to organize, control, and direct these rebellions. The Fruit of Islam was clearly not up to the job because they had not been able to properly respond to the killing and shooting of their members by the local police. Nor could the rural-based groups lend any support as they were still involved in life and death struggles with the Klan and Southern police. SNCC made a half-hearted attempt to transfer their operations to urban areas. However, besides H.R. Brown and a few others, it seemed that after their Southern experience, SNCC was scared off. The urban rebellions brought forth scores of new political formations, and these formations generally adhere theoretically to the idea of armed self-defense. Along with this shift in tactics came a new nationalist-sounding politics, which was usually a separatist bent, although the rediscovery of Pan-Africanism began to occur as well. Unfortunately, these new formations adopted the high-profile strategy of the civil rights movement, which brought excessive media coverage. In reality, these organizations were no longer part of the civil rights movement and were now involved in the black liberation struggle. The civil rights people needed this type of exposure to get their message across and to help protect them against the most flagrant abuses. The black liberation struggle, however, demanded a more clandestine way of handling affairs. It had to prepare for a guerrilla war and to take on this preparation in secret. And so we've discussed this before, about separating the above ground and the below ground and the mistakes that were made, what happened. I mean, because I don't really try to be that critical on the party members and those comrade elders and fighters, because it's like, how else could you have responded? Who could have known that you would become involved in this armed struggle against the greatest military power ever created in the history of the world and its intelligence agency? So we have to look at these things, see what was done, and analyze them in a way going forward where we don't make those same mistakes. This fact was lost on the new younger generation. They were impressed by Malcolm X and the fiery orators, but did not realize that Malcolm X had served as a motivator and educator. They did not understand that they were embarking on a new phase that demanded quiet, patient organizing and training. The tens of thousands of potential recruits were already showing through the massive rebellions that they were already sufficiently stimulated and were waiting for someone to show them how to get the job done. There was still a good deal of agitation, propaganda, and education that needed to be done, but not by those who saw their mission as forming black fighting formations. This mistake was usually made because these groups tried to combine the activities of the military and political workers in the same cadre. Remember, above ground and below ground. They did not realize that the situation demanded specialization, both political workers, motivators, educators, marchers, and military workers, armed self-defense, and assault units. The Deacons had it right. An outstanding practitioner of this new form of resistance was the Revolutionary Action Movement, which began an intensive organization and campaign in the northeastern states in 66 and 67. Much of his activity was centered in Philly. Ram was militant, nationalist, and high profile. His cadre spray-painted "Join the Black Guard" slogan on walls in the communities. The Black Guard was their public military arm. Ram's leaders were in front of the cameras and on all important issues, and the Black Guard cadre could often be seen at their cultural centers wearing fatigues and black parades. The sisters and brothers in Ram's youth group, the Liberators, dressed in black with black parades. These activities helped members of the black community feel good and believe the revolution was right around the corner. Ironically, no one in Philadelphia had heard of the similar group, which began in California, known as the Black Panther Party of Defense and Justice. Ram's activities scared white folks, especially those because some members of Ram went out of their way to ensure this. They reasoned that they had been kept down long enough and it was time to strike back. Unfortunately, in 67, the white establishment struck back, too. And over a period of months, H. Brown and other leaders in key cadre were arrested. While Ram advocated self-defense and owned weapons, his members did not carry them in public. Consequently, they were arrested for everything from jaywalking to conspiring to put cyanide in the police department rations at a major holiday celebration. Ram had not fired a shot. However, some alleged members and supporters were arrested, bringing dynamite back from Canada, allegedly blew up the Statue of Liberty. Once again, the Black Panther 21. These arrests crippled Ram, right? So that is the analysis of, so we're coming up through the time as he's making these analyses. Ultimately, the government's success in carrying out this campaign, the original coordinator, of course, this attack on Ram, you have to study that up. Baba Ahmed. He laid that stuff out. But the situation with the Black Panther Party for Defense and Justice was somewhat different. This group, founded in 1966 in Oakland, followed the same pattern as Ram, but it had an advantage. There was a clause in the California state law that allowed citizens to carry arms in public as long as they were not loaded. The BPP took full advantage of this in order to brand its weapons wherever they went. At that time, this seemed to be the height of militancy, and they received more attention than any other group from the community, media, and police. Despite this attention, they could not be dealt with as easily as Ram because Ram always carried loaded weapons. After a few confrontations with the police, it became apparent that the police could not bluff or intimidate these young blacks. Because of this, BPP members were provoked into gun battles with police, and within a year, co-founder Huey Newton had been shot and was in prison for killing a cop who shot him Little Bobby Hutton was the first BPP member to be killed after two Carlos the Panther were ambushed by police. Others were wounded in jail. Bobby Seale, the other co-founder, had been jailed for marching into the state capitol with other Panthers to protect the new law that prohibited carrying guns in public. The top three leaders, Newton, Seale, and Elge Cleaver, was captured after a shootout with the police in which Hutton was killed, were all in prison, along with other key leaders and cadre. So you see this quick move to open militancy, whereby which you come under this open attack. And as Russell Maroon is saying earlier, we must form these fighting formations from the beginning, having it as an established idea to have the above ground formation and have the below ground armed formation and keep them separate. That is part of military organization. In regards to it, then the officers in this will, their information is compartmentalized. Not everybody has all of the information. That's how you organize a military. That is how you set the intelligence network within that military from the top hierarchy, right? So coming down through this period of time with these black fighting formations. Of course, with the Black Panther Party, we know the matriculation of the assaults by the FBI against them, the Panther 21 trial, the imprisonment, the shooting, imprisonment, and escape of Auntie Asada, the exploits and the manhunt for Baba Mutundu and so many others. And also, to just look at it from a positive side, I just always see that having Herman Bell and Sekou Odinga and Yoruba Bin Wahad and Eddie Conway and all of these political prisoners to move Comrade home represents a victory for the African liberation struggle in the United States, because if you take advantage of it, if you look at it from a historical perspective, then you will see that you have access, direct access to some of the greatest revolutionary historians in the history of the world. If you look at movement, what happened to them? What do you think is in these people's mind? What experience do they have about repression from the United States government? But I want to go on, because Maroon is giving you, he's going through some of these, as I just described, the shootout with Auntie Asada, BLA member Quincy Balagoon, escaped from New Jersey State Prison. He was part of BLA task force that liberated Asada Shakur, Cynthia Wayo, Robert Saeed Joyner, Cliff Futch. Some of these names you may not have heard of. Joseph Jojo Bowen. Of course, Rochelle St. Q. McGee. These comrades, these great freedom fighters, and of course Field Marshal George and his brother Jonathan. These are the freedom fighters of the African liberation struggle in the history of the United States. And when you start to name these names, you put together a collection of study in order to be able to have access to this information, if that's what you're trying to do, you know. If you're trying to liberate some, you know, then you got to go to the people who did that and got the experience with it from before. That's only, it just makes sense, right? So, Maroon, at the end of this chapter, Black Fighting Formation, he did say that the BLA had attempted to recruit and reintegrate political workers who had left or been expelled from the BPP, right? So there was an attempt at reorganization of your fighting forces. So we look at the history. We see the repression. We see the attack. We see the killings, the imprisonment, and then you see a reorganization. And whatever revolution you study, from the Chinese to the Cuban to the Vietnamese, the Korean, you will see that each and every time you will see the buildup of forces, the repression, the attack by whoever is coming against them, and then you'll see them reorganize themselves back into formations and go forward into victory. That occurs every time. You've got to be able to face the repression and then reorganize yourself. And the Black Panther Party, with its reorganization, became the Black Liberation Army. Those activities being centered and focused mostly here on the East Coast. When you can go to a website, The Talking Drum, there are these topics at the bottom of the page, a whole bunch of topics, and one is called the Freedom Fighters, and it has a list on there, thetalkingdrum.com, of the actions of the Black Liberation Army. This is from the perspective of the FBI, so, you know, you have to take it with a grain of salt. That's why I say you have to do your cross-research to get into the real revolutionary history. But I want to leave you with something else, too, because what we're dealing with, this internecine warfare that is being foisted upon us, right, by imperialists, by capitalists. Capitalists are paying young men to make songs about killing each other and then actually do it. And whoever pulls off the most prolific killings gets the most money. Musical mercenaries. Called drill music all across the country, beginning in Chicago, down in Memphis, and these guys, Fulio and Ace down in where I'm from, in Jacksonville, and down in Baton Rouge. All of these places, record company executives pay these guys money. It ain't like before, based on the number of CDs you sell out to Trump. Ain't nobody got CDs no more. The sales based upon views and whatever these record company executives see as being the most popular and based upon the actions of these young men, basically setting them up for prison. They're rapping about what they actually have done. It's just the silliest thing ever, right? And so Maroon gives us this particular article, this treatise called Liberation or Gangsterism, Freedom or Slavery. From 2006, right? I want you to check Maroon on this. The first wave, 1955 to 1980. The civil rights movement in the South successfully motivated Black, Puerto Rican, Euro-American, Native American, Chicano, Mexicano, Indigenous, and Asian youth to use their time, energy, creativity, and imagination to discover their true self-worth and earn the respect of the entire world while struggling towards broader goals that were not measured by one's material possessions. Over time, each segment cheered on, supported, worked in solidarity with, and or discovered their committed interest and closely linked missions connected to broader goals. The Black youth elevated the civil rights movement to become Black power and Black liberation movements. Puerto Rican youth energized their elders' ongoing struggle for independence for their home island. Your American youth attacked the lies, hypocrisy, and oppression their parents were training them to uphold in the schools, in society, and overseas. Native American youth were returning to their suppressed ancestral ways and fighting to regain control over some of the land. Asian youth were struggling to overcome a system and culture that had always used and abused them. Indeed, all of them came to clearly see that education, jobs, money, hustles, and material travels could not, by themselves, win them the victory they needed or the new type of dignity and respect they deserved. Yet, here we are, 30 years later, and the youth nowadays are ridiculed, have been stripped of their hard-earned freedom, self-respect, and dignity. They're again being told over and over that the only way to regain these things is to acquire education, skills, jobs, or the right hustle, and to once again accumulate as much money and material things as possible. How the hell did we get back to 1955? That's more crazy. Strategic tricks used against the youth, right? Understanding these tricks and their various guises and refinements is the key to everything. you'll never really understand what happened to get us to the present moment or be able to really move forward until you become a master at recognizing them and at devising ways to defeat them, right? We talk about our children. Russell Maroon tells you, this defeated trick, use the gift of youth. You got to know and how to attack it, to overcome it. We can need them in his arm, right? Number one, co-option, you know, make them rap. Glamorization of gangsterism. How about that? Separation from the most advanced elements. That means that they don't get access to us, those revolutionary freedom fighters. Indoctrination in reliance on passive approaches. That means their parents told them they got to trust in the law. Raw fear. You're just scared. You know? I think that might be the majority. And drugs. You know, today is the proliferation of, I mean, a lot of these children's minds are gone. But co-option, Russell Maroon goes on to say, was used extensively to trick just about all of the first wave youth into believing that they had won the war. Strategically, among every segment of the youth that we can name, university students to lower class communities, billions of dollars were made available. Supposedly, these funds were to enable the youth to determine what should be done to carry out the far-reaching changes they desire. In reality, they were being expertly monitored and subtly coaxed further and further away from their most radical and advanced elements. Wow. Mainly through control of this funding. This was part of the strategy adopted by ruling class foundations, by government, and by corporate America for defeating the youth with sugar-coated bullets. In time, consequently, substantial segments of these previously rebellious youth found themselves fully absorbed and neutralized by either directly joining foundations, corporations, universities, faculty, approved community groups, or by becoming full-fledged junior partners after winning control of thousands of previously out-of-reach political offices and government posts. The same trick is being used today. Glamorization of gangsterism, however, was then and continues to be the most harmful trick played against lower-class segments of youth. Males in particular were and continue to be most susceptible to this gambit, especially when combined with a prolonged exposure to raw fear. Let me illustrate by considering two historic groups which presently enjoy nothing less than iconic status among just about everyone who is aware of them. Yet, their documented history clearly shows how the trick was and continues to be played throughout this country. Therefore, the following is a brief but clear history of how the original Black Panther Party was bludgeoned and intimidated to the point where its key leaders consciously steered the group into accepting the glamorization of gangsterism. Because this represented less of a threat to ruling class interests, the BPP wanted temporary respite from the raw fear which ruling circles in the United States had been leveling against them. In the process, however, these leaders who went along with this gangster emphasis totally destroyed the organization. Secondly, we will consider the Nation of Islam connected Black Mafia, which had a different background. But the same two tricks were played against them. Left in their wake was a sordid tale of young Black men who were, again, turned from seeking to be liberators into ruthless oppressors of their own communities, never once engaged in their real enemies and oppressors, the ruling class. Hands down, the original BPP won more attention, acclaim, respect, support, and sympathy than any other youth of their time. At the same time, it provoked more fear and worry in ruling class circles than any domestic group since President Roosevelt, Truman, and Eisenhower presided over the neutralization of the labor movement and the U.S. wing of the Communist Party. The BPP was even more feared than the much larger civil rights movement. According to the head of the FBI, they were the biggest threat to America. That threat came from their ability to inspire other youth, both in the U.S. and globally, to act in similar ways. On the other hand, the Nation of Islam had been active since 1930, yet it also experienced a huge upsurge in membership in the same period as the BPP, due mainly to the charismatic personality of Malcolm X and his aggressive recruitment techniques. This continued after Malcolm's assassination, fueled by the overall rebellious spirit of the youth looking for some group that would lead them in the fight against the system. There's a mountain of documents that clearly show that the highest power in the country classified both groups as Class A threats, one that they wanted to either neutralize or destroy. Even musing that if this goal could be achieved, they could then use similar methods to defeat youth in the rest of the country. So how did they do it? Against the BPP, they used a combination of co-option, glamorization of gangsterism, separation from the most advanced elements, indoctrination and passive impulses, and raw fear, every trick in the book, right? These were developed and used as early as against Malcolm Garvey during IA and in early 1900s during the Palmer raids against Euro-Americans of the anarchist or left social bent in the 1930s, crushing the industrial workers of the world and neutralizing other socialists and in underground work that contributed to the defeat of Germany and Italy during World War II. So Maroon is giving you an analysis, right, across the board, internationally, of you and how revolutionary movements have been carried out and how they have been recruited in it and how United States imperialism is swaying our youth away from being involved in revolutionary organization. And we must study these techniques. We must study these points that he said, the glamorization of gangsterism, which we know, and co-option and all the other things, and devise techniques to recruit our children, make fighting cool again, right? Russell Maroon goes on to say, the co-option depended upon the state being able to neutralize BPP co-founder, by that time an icon, Huey P. Newton, and then using him combined with other methods to split the BPP and lead Newton's wing along reformist lines while forcing the still revolutionary wing into an all-out armed confrontation before it was ready. In this way, the repressive forces hope to either kill, jail, exile, or break the BPP's will to resist and send its cadre into an ineffective underground existence. What's more, even with the BPP's extraordinary status globally, no country seems to want to risk the wrath of the United States by openly allowing the BPP to train guerrilla units on their soil. Surprisingly, therefore, Huey Newton was allowed to leave jail with the murder charge for killing a policeman still pending. Thus, the government and courts had him on a short leash. With that leash, they hoped to control his actions, although probably not through any direct agreement. Sadly, the still politically naive BPP cadre and other youth who looked up to Newton can only imagine that they had forced his release. Today, some veterans from those times still insist on clinging to that trike. Yet it seems Newton had other ideas. And since he was not prepared to go underground and joining his fledgling Black Liberation Army, he almost immediately began to follow a reformist script that was completely at odds with his own earlier theories and writings. This script was also at odds with basic principles that were being practiced by oppressed people around the world to good effect. Further, he used his almost complete control of BPP Central Committee to expel many veteran and combat-tested BPP cadre in imitation of the Stalinist and Euro-gangster posture he would later become infamous for. Wow. Involving an all-out shooting war to suppress any BPP members who would not accept his independently derived reformist policies. At the same time, and on a parallel track, U.S. and local police intelligence agents were using their now infamous COINTELPRO operation to provoke the split between Newton's wing and other less compliant BPP members, which was finally consummated in 71 after Newton's shooting war and purge forced scores of other of the most loyal, fearless, and dedicated above-ground BPP members to go underground. There, they were joined by those other BPP members who were already functioning as an offensive armed wing. They were known by names such as Panther Wolves, African American Liberation Army and Black Liberation Army. But only the last one stuck. I love them. The BLA had already become a confederation of clandestine guerrilla units of mostly Black revolutionary nationalists from any number of formations who were willing to accept the BPP's leadership and who also accepted Huey Newton as their Minister of Defense. But obviously, Newton didn't see it that way. Most telling, it was later learned that Newton's expensive penthouse apartment, where he had other Central Committee members handle any number of sensitive BPP issues, was under ongoing surveillance by intelligence agents who had another apartment down the hall. Thus, Newton and his faction were boxed in, unable to follow anything but government-sanctioned scripts unless he went underground, which only occurred when Newton fled to Cuba after his gangster antics threatened the revocation of his release under pending legal matters that the government still had over his head. In addition, to the glamorization of gangsterism, there was something that the various ruling class elements had begun to champion and push on the Black lower classes, as I come to a conclusion. Follow this ideology, right? You can be Black, cool, rebellious, dangerous, rich, have respect, women, cars, fine clothes, jewelry, an expensive home, and even stay high. As long as you don't fight the system or the cops. But if you don't go along with that script, get ready to go back to the early days to shoot out with the cops and ending up in the grave, out in prison, on the run, or in exile. You can still be cool, even as a Huggy Bear-style snitch or his buddy, modern-day futuristic cat, Cypher of the Matrix, right? Who tried to betray Zion in return for a fake life as a rich, steak-eating movie star. Most importantly, no more fighting with the aliens. Get it? So Newton began to indulge in drugs as a way to relieve the stress of all that he was facing. He became drug addict, plain and simple. That, however, didn't upset the newly constructed gangster cool that Hollywood, the ruling class, and the government were pushing, although many BPP cadre and other outsiders were very concerned about it. But Newton's control was by then too firmly fixed for anyone to challenge it, except the BLA, which by then was in a full-blown guerrilla war with the government. Right? It's like you see the psychology of what they were facing, the decisions that they had to make as leadership, right? In classical Euro gangster fashion, Newton had turned to preying on eight segments of the community that he had earlier vowed to liberate. But of course, the police and government were wise to him. Since there was no true connection to an underground, there was no rational way to ratchet up the pressure on the police, the government, and the still fully operational system of ruling class control and oppression. Newton's BPP had been reduced to relying completely on methods that were officially sanctioned. Consequently, we can all see we see all of the government's efforts bearing fruit. Newton's faction of the BPP had limited itself to either legal or underworld-style approach, co-optation or indoctrination in reliance on passive approaches that were passive towards the status quo. He fell for the trick of severing all relations with the armed underground, the BLA, which would lead the BPP, if it got to the next level of struggle, open armed resistance to the oppressor. This was separation from the most advanced elements. Remember that? One of the five. It pains to read it, but the healing is in carrying out without making those same mistakes. Finally, it says, well, because of Newton's control, his faction was immersed in the glamorization of gangsterism. Finally, Newton and his faction, along with activists from other American radical and revolutionary groups, succumbed to the terror and raw fear that was being leveled against them. All but those who waged armed struggle were jailed, killed, exiled, forced into hiding, or into continuing their activism underground. So you have to see the ways in which, as Russell Maroon has laid it out, that we, as New Africa, approaching the African liberation struggle in this geographical region of the United States, how we use these treaties and these methods that Russell Maroon has laid out. First of all, giving us an analysis of the black fighting formations, and I would say that that deserves a further, a deeper study of the Beacons for Defense and Revolutionary Action Movement. But in conclusion, we have to study how the tricks that are being used against the youth and how we overcome them. Those tricks of co-option, glamorization of gangsterism, separation from the most advanced elements, indoctrination and reliance on passive approaches, raw fear, and drugs. If you want to see our liberation, you're going to have to find a way to recruit those youth into the armed forces of New Africa. This has been your combat reporter here on Al Kibalon News. And remember, as always, African family, stay vigilant.
Black power.
Black power.
Black power. Black power, Brother Tutmos. That was a very powerful discussion that you laid out, you know, and being a part of the new Black Panther Party, which is a continuation mm-hmm. of the work of the Black Panther parties of the 60s and 70s, is key that we have the benefit of having history before us, whereas in the time of the 60s and 70s, they were actually going through these different elements of
right.
counterintelligence program, infiltration, and all of that. But being an active member, next year will make 20 years on the front line, engaged mm-hmm. in armed resistance, engaged in political struggle. All of these things that, you know, we had the benefit of hearing from elders such as, you know, yours truly, as you're speaking of, Brother Russell Schultz, and other OG Panthers that have guided us and continue to guide us to this day. You know, we are the only
yeah.
formation that has been consistent since 1989. This year makes 31 years, that the new Black Panther Party has been on the ground, not only in Texas, but across the country. And it is indeed an uphill battle, but I can speak from firsthand knowledge, you know. We've read all of the documents. We've talked to the OGs, and we're still facing the same enemy, the tactics that the government put in place. What do you say, glamorize, gangsterism, reformism,
mm-hmm.
all of those things are still in place. And I would add this new element that has been put in place is the propagation and the heavy push of homosexuality onto the movement.
Oh, yeah.
You know, not only into the movement, but into our community as a whole. You know, in 2021, you know, what we faced over these last few years, of 20 years that I've been in this organization, we've also had, and I know he spoke on that, but I want to expound on it, what we've been greatly affected by internally have been infiltrators
mm-hmm.
who have come inside and have caused fractionalized, you know, breakdown, you know, and some of it is clearly, you know, COINTELPRO, but a good majority of it is what we refer to as NegroTELPRO. You know,
mm-hmm.
Negroes
mm-hmm.
wanting to be in charge. You know what I'm saying? Negroes that are half conscious, pseudo revolutionary, you know, but the struggle continues, you know, the struggle
mm-hmm.
continues. The fight for the political prisoners, you know, those who came before us is very key. And, you know, we give a salute to you, Brother Tutmos, as you are one of a few people who are consistently in this country pushing and raising awareness in regards to the plight of our political prisoners. All of these things are
yeah,
relevant.
You know,
I
remember Dr. Collett talking to me about the importance of political prisoners, and he especially loved Geronimo Gijaga, right?
Right.
And he would
I think it was kind of him who put me on that path of, like, studying them intensely, right? Mm-hmm. Because, of course, that was one of us, that's one of our points, you know, freedom for all political prisoners. And so it was like I started studying them, and then an amazing thing happened. Like, the people I was studying, like, when I looked up again, I was working with them. It's like some kind of fairy tale, right? I was talking about Sekou Odinga and had an event and a concert for him, and his wife was here, and then the next thing I know, he's here at my house at the RBG Music Festival talking to the community. It's like that, as I've always said, the political prisoners, fighting for the liberation of political prisoners is one of the things that you can actually do that is governmental policy as a nation, as New Africa, you know? Kind of the rest of it is survival. We have to stop the police murders, right? We have to fight against the prison system and the education system and all these things. These things are, once we have a nation, we have to establish, but while we're struggling for those things within their nation, it's this kind of survival tactics. But when you fight for the freedom of political prisoners, every nation in the world, when they go to a war and when it's over with, they go back and fight for their prisoners. And see, that's what New Africa has to understand, the spiritual importance of fighting for political prisoners, how it puts you in the mind frame of becoming a nation. It is a job of statesmanship.
Right. But in addition to that, I mean, fighting for justice, when we on this body front, it is of survival, but it is more so also a major recruitment tool, because we have to recruit the youth. We have to recruit people to get involved. And when you have people that are out fighting for justice, you know, when you have the majority of the people that are not, you know, these are where we find our most dedicated people who come on board and get involved in the party. You know,
absolutely.
People that definitely, you know, recruit online and things of that nature, but these are all a part of the constant battle, you know, because I find a lot of times people glamorize the 60s and the 70s, and it's very important for us to understand what took place, but we are in an ongoing battle, you know. The work has to continue. The infiltration, the neutralization or incarceration and open assassination of the brothers and sisters of the Black Panther Party, you know, those who are behind enemy lines are key that we fight for their release. You know, we wouldn't have this platform to stand on had they not laid the way, but the battle is on now. It has never stopped. It didn't stop when what happened with Huey and Bobby and all of them. You know, the enemy, in fact, increased. You know, as you said, the gangsterism, you know, became a part of marketing for how they would, bring on artists, music artists, the message that goes out, which is blatantly, you know, prior to the Obama era, it was so much, you know, bitch this, nigga that, kill a nigga this, kill a nigga that, not just gangsterism, but what is that term when you kill your own kind? Gangsterism mixed with fratricide, you know what I'm saying? And so, yeah, and now, you know, post-Obama, you know, when he come out and, you know, which goes back to what, you know, the brother was referencing to about this reformism, you know, we can be a part of this government. You know, look, we got a black man, but this black man is not a black man. He's pushing imperialism, capitalism, you know, and you know, was key into what we're dealing with now in Africa with sending troops into Libya, and you know, all of these elements, the battle is continuing, you know, but we have the benefit of having our elders, you know. This is why one of the key reasons why they fight so adamantly not to release our political prisoners, because we have real life elders, brothers, sisters that could teach us, you know, what they went through, and then also to put that fear in us, like, oh yeah, you want to be a revolutionary? You know, you want to be a Black Panther, you know, this could be your the outcome, you know, aside from murdering you, you know, to lock you up and have you in solitary confinement for over 20 years, 22 years, you know, I wonder, you know, how many studies have been done? How many white people have been put in solitary confinement for over 20 years? I wonder. How many how many people that are not political of the Black Liberation Movement have been put in solitary confinement for over these years? Is that something that you know, or is that something that
I mean, as long as I've been whole in 6 months, but like, there's a difference going to the whole psychologically when you know it's political and you went for something else. Because when you go to the whole for something political, the brother's going to look out for you inside. They're going to see you, the ones who passing out the trees in the back. You're going to slip a little something under your door, your partner sent to you. Or they're going to sit you a note, keep your head up. We got you, you know. And so it's different when you, and that is part of the reason why these comrades are able to last that long. I mean, Russell Maroon himself was in the hole for over 20 years, you know. And there has been studies on that. The original founding of the prison system was based on the word penitentiary itself is based on penitence, because it was to make you make repentance, right? They put you in the cell, nothing but the Bible, and they say you just got to come to terms with who you are in the eyes of God. But they said if you did it for over 10 years, the person was no good anymore. They could never readjust to society. I mean, that was part of the study of it. So what the United States imperialism did was they said, okay, well, if you say they're keeping them in there, they got the security stuff about, you know, you, for whatever reason, they put you in there for however long. But they'll say, well, we'll just keep them locked up, and then we'll work them. And then so we let them out to get some air. That's where that whole thing comes from, the hour of exercise and all of that, right? But the study says that a person is broken psychologically. But I can say that when you go to the hole for political reasons, that revolutionary fervor keeps one sane.
Now, has there been anyone who was not political that was put into prison for this long amount of period is what the question is.
It's like we're in the hole, right? And so you see these guys that get shipped from prison to prison, from hole to hole. You know, they do it in the various ways. Like, I've seen people who, like, for 2 or 3 years don't do nothing but just get shipped from hole to hole. You know, when you're in transit, you're in the hole. So they just ship them from place to place. We call it diesel therapy, right? And all kind of people, crazy ass white boys that throw feces and all this stuff, right? And they be in their hole for years and years and years, and they absolutely nuts. Absolutely nuts. Right. Out of their damn minds. You know? And then you go to the hole and you meet some brother from Chicago, or, you know, I was in the Fed, or New York, or New Orleans, or somewhere. And the brother, clean cut, Muslim, got his kufi on and got his Quran and kicking that knowledge, been in the hole 10 years. But mine just as clear. Because that knowledge and consciousness is what gets him through. But the others, they lose their mind in there. They end up throwing doo-doo on people, all kind of crazy stuff.
So you're saying that the people who are there that are not political have mental issues, psychological issues, and they, you know, trying to keep them away from, I guess, the regular population. But I guess what I'm getting at is
they develop mental issues
psychological
by being
warfare
in there that long.
Trying to, go ahead.
They develop mental issues by being in there that long, because the reasoning they were in there does not give them that spiritual might, that spiritual strength to keep their sanity throughout it. And so they break over time.
And how does that play into, which we know they don't honor any laws, but cruel and unusual treatment and human rights violations. How does that play?
Well,
is that, you know, how does that play into it?
Well, the UN back when, let me see, I forgot what year it was, about 10 years ago, when Juan Mendez was the UN Special Rapporteur on human rights, and he came to the United States and visited the prisons. The UN has said it is unjust and inhumane. So there's no doubt about it. The world knows that the United States prison system is absolutely a doo-doo hole of lives of people that are being wasted for profit.
Now, brother, I want to also remind the brothers and sisters. When you were going, I wrote so many notes. I wanted to ask you about, can you give us an update on the status of what's going on with Brother Schultz? But also I want to remind everyone that's listening, if you want to get into the dialogue or ask a question or have a comment, press 1 and we'll bring you into the queue. But, for those of you who are listening online and you want to get into the discussion, dial 718-664-6398. That's 718-664-6398. You will hear the same dialogue, but you can press 1 and actually get into it. That's for the callers. But, Tudmos, can you give us an update on what's going on with Bobby Schultz?
Right now, and I'm trying to pull it up, they are carrying out a campaign because basically what they did was the campaign for Russell Maroon's release was based upon compassionate release, because basically what they did was waited until he got stage 4 cancer and then release them, and that's for different reasons. One is they don't have to worry about those expenses and things of that nature, you know. And so, and then it makes them look as if they're trying to give some play to show some humanity. So the Schultz family, and you can find information on Russell Maroon Schultz at freemaroonnow.com, and you will see on there the campaign to help the Schultz family with Maroon's medical expenses, which are very, very, very expensive. He is receiving stage 4 cancer treatment, and he's hanging in there. You know, I was able to hear his voice from talking to his daughter, Teresa Schultz, my comrade, and the family is very busy with his medical care. So he is home, he's with the family, he has good medical care, and we're sending him spirit power and healing energy so that one day he can, as other comrades have, come and give us that wisdom in person. But you can get information on him at freemaroonnow.com.
So the best thing that everyone needs to do right now is to financially contribute by going to freemaroonnow.com and allow and put the positive energy out to the universe that he has a full recovery and is able to enjoy, you know, his days. Was this the same situation? I believe you mentioned a few weeks ago that happened with Sekou.
Right.
Regarding
Sekou,
the health
right. But see, they didn't want to let Sekou go right then. So the feds tried to get him back, but the feds had released him to the state, so they couldn't get him back. So, yeah, the state, the only reason they was releasing him was because he was sick, but they still wasn't really planning to let him go all the way. The feds were trying to grab him, but we got him out of it. But he was able to recover once he came home also. So hopefully the same happens with Bobby Maroon.
Right, and this is what we got to make clear to our brothers and sisters, you know, that the support has to be there. Now, Tudmos, I know there are, or other political prisoners that are still behind enemy lines, you know, could you please try to highlight some of those brothers and sisters that need the support now, and what other vehicles Is it your organization or other organizations should people go to support the political prisoners that are currently behind enemy lines?
The national organization for release of political prisoners, I feel like the most effective one is the Jericho Movement. So you can go to the JerichoMovement.com, the J-E-R-I-C-H-O Movement.com, and you will see a list there of political prisoners. And right now, Dr. Mutulu Shakur, he's also suffering from cancer. There's a campaign we're carrying out for his immediate release, which he passes parole date anyway. He and Veronica Bowers, who about 4 years ago also underwent cancer treatment behind enemy lines and also had a hip replacement, all within a year's time. So we're still fighting for his liberation. Veronica and Mutulu cases are similar because they're both political, they're both federal prisoners, and they both are past the mandatory time that was allotted to them. They're under the old law. Under the old law, a life sentence is 30 years if you don't have any bad record behind enemy lines. They both don't have this behind enemy lines. Matter of fact, they get people from Congress and stuff to write in to the parole board for them. So we're keeping an eye on the legal status of both of those cases and their health also. Also, Lucille McGee, 81 years old, man. 57 years, Russell Maroon Schultz has been in that hell hole California prison system, man. You know? And so there's on the top news on political prisoner news on the Jericho Movement, there's a support political prisoner Rochelle McGee parole board hearing that occurred when that actually is coming up. So we have comrade Rochelle McGee also that from the famous Marin County shootout with the comrade Jonathan. But some of the other political prisoners, Brother Abdul Aziz, this is one of the Virgin Islands political prisoners. The Virgin Islands was invaded by the United States Marines in 1972. There were five brothers, Muslim brothers, that became political prisoners. There were leaders of the freedom fighters there in the Virgin Islands against the United States Marines. That became known as the Virgin Island Five. Also, of course, we know of Baba Abu Mumia Abu Jamal of the Black Panther Party and MOVE, and one of the most popular political prisoners, with his great commentaries that he gives on prison radio, the MOVE organization, and the concerned friends and family, international friends and family. Mumia Abu-Jamal carrying out one of the strongest campaigns in the history of political prisoners. Also, don't forget Comrade Sundiata Okoli from the New Jersey Turnpike shootout. Also, from here locally, from Atlanta, Imam Jamil Alameen, of course, and the frame-up of him here by the Fulton County Sheriff's Department and the FBI. Also, Brother Joseph Bowen, a ex-Black Liberation Army comrade, as the aforementioned Veronica Bowers. Also, Brother Kojo Brown, Kojo Sabalu, comrade, I write back and forth to him. Freddie Burton, Freddie Muhammad Burton, also of the Black Panther Party. Hanif Shabazz Bey, another one of the Virgin Island Five. Another local political prisoner, well, one who was set up by the authorities here locally, Kamal Siddiqui, also known as Freddie Hilton. My comrade sister, you'll see on the Jericho Movement him holding his baby girl there, and that's my comrade, Kasiste, his daughter, who's now grown and comes here to Georgia to visit her father. Also, Larry Hoover, who just his birthday the other day, they had a big celebration with comrades, the street room, for comrade Larry Hoover. Speaking of, like we were talking about, liberation of gangsterism, Larry Hoover and Jeff Fort, a.k.a. Abdul Malik Kabak, have both put out statements, you can find them online, to try to bring some sense to these street organizations that are completely out of control. Now, both of them brothers, both of them are ADX2 at the Supermax, as state prisoners who were transferred to federal jurisdiction, just like Imam Jamil Alameen. But as, I'm going to look those up, and at some other time, we'll go over those writings from those comrades. Also, Brother Melvin Mays, also known as Maumeen Kabir, one of the political prisoners very few know about. He's from the Republic of New Africa. He came along during that time. We already mentioned Michelle McGee, another one of the Virgin Islands Five, Brother Malik Smith, another one of those comrades. Leonard Peltier, the Native American Movement comrade being held down in Coleman Prison down in Florida. They're fighting desperately for his liberation. The whole Leonard Peltier is one of those figures of the liberation struggle that unites the whole of the movement from the Lakota Nation. Ed Poindexter, he's part of the comrades from out of Omaha 3. We've already mentioned, and we've already mentioned Bob. Go ahead.
I say you're in communication, and we understand with Jalil Moose the King.
Oh, yes. Baba Jalil and I are organizing based on his schedule for him to come on himself and for he and I to analyze his book, We Are Our Own Liberators. That'll be coming up soon on an episode of Al Kibanar News.
Are you familiar with the case of Gary Tyler?
Yes. Yes. Yes, Gary Tyler, also another political prisoner. Yes, absolutely. That was that's one of he was he's very close with Sekou. Yes, Sekou loved that.
Man, when you run into all these names, I'm writing them down, and you run into all these names. We're talking about a good two dozen.
Yeah,
freedom fighters. Mm-hmm. This is a very practical and tangible mission that we as a people can uphold. It's not like you're talking about, you know, hundreds of thousands of people. You're talking about 15 people. I'm sorry, 20 people, 20 to 24 mm-hmm. people who have long served their time. You know, who have long paid any type of, regardless of what that they were so-called accused of, you know, they've long served their time. You know, so this campaign to free our political prisoners.
It all goes together, though. See, it
go
all
ahead.
Goes together. The same way that Russell Maroon was talking about the way those organizations were formed from the beginning, I mean, you have to use your imagination for the purposes of that armed wing, right? And I have to say, I mean, yeah, we're talking about 20 people, but, you know, a couple of years ago, two, 3 years ago, we were talking about 35 people because we all got all the
right,
news folks
right.
on and Herman Bell and, you know, several others.
Right.
So,
Eddie Conway and all of them. Because I remember when, but what I'm saying, but my point is organizational-wise, as a people, as a mm-hmm. movement, this is something practical that we can see to make really, you know, happen. You know, there must be a concerted effort to zero in on this. You know, mm-hmm. like, even if it's state by state. You know that. You know, I know, as you mentioned, the Jericho movement has been at the forefront. And this is a call to action that I'm putting to the table for everyone who is listening across the planet. You know, this is very practical to do. It's not something that's, you know, far-fetched. As the brother just mentioned, I remember when when I became the chair in 2013, when we put out our magazine in 2014, you know, it was close to 40 people, like you said, maybe 35. And, mm-hmm. and maybe was a good dozen of them have been released since then. And that's in a 7-year period. You know, what are some of the things, you know, let's give some tasks to our audience. You know, you've clearly laid out the reason, you know. You've clearly laid out why our brothers are locked up, strictly political, for being freedom fighters. Let's give some tasks to the listening audience. You gave one instruction, you know, support financially. Right. The medical support for Brother Schultz by going to freemaroonnow.com. You know, go to the Jericho Movement to learn and do mm-hmm. your homework on all of these and you know, send them letters and support. But, you know, if you could, you know, in your years of experience, could you lay out what are some of the most important things, you know, that we can be doing and to help and what we are lacking on, you know what I'm saying? And what has been most effective, brother? If you can, Black Power.
Black Power. Yeah, you know, I get a chance to work with a lot of different political prisoners with defense campaigns, and the comrades and I are. See, when you deal with political prisoners, you come up. People try to lump all of them together, so they get you the white ones and all of that, right? And so what we wanted to do was bring a class action for all of the freedom fighters from the Black Liberation Struggle. And that's what we did earlier this year in October with the Spirit of Mandela Tribunal. The tribunal was laid out. The charges laid out. United States government found guilty of genocide. So from that point, what we do is we take it to the next level. This is on the legal front because there's different ways you have to approach it. But the legal front, by what we said was we wanted all of those cases under one defense committee, the Black Panther Party Political Prisoner Defense Committee. And so all of those cases become one. But it's difficult because some people don't want their cases in there lumped with everybody else. Because they might get some rhythm with the parole board. You know what I mean? So you have to be careful with how you approach it. You have to get everybody's consent with it. But we need to find a way to unite these different scattered political prisoner defense campaigns. That's one thing that we're kind of working on to see how it, and the tribunal was a major step towards it. Of course, as you mentioned, go to JerichoMovement.com and look up the different political prisoners, write to them, look up their individual campaigns. You'll see their names, but then look up their individual defense committee campaigns. Verify these things. Oftentimes, organizations are involved with these defense campaigns, particularly the more popular political prisoners, Matulu and Mumia and others. But seek these campaigns out. Give them support. Become active in your city. Make another branch of their support campaigns. Here locally, we have the Imam Jamil Action Network, and we work with many organizations to bring about the liberation of Imam Jamil Alameen. Also, another thing, just like we're saying here with what Russell Maroon is talking about, we have to find an effective plan to recruit the youth into our liberation organization, period, or it's lost. The strategies that we carry out, right, in order to bring this into play will be tried, true, and tested strategies that can go throughout the nation, just like with the Nation of Islam, right? The way that they fish people from the lower classes, as Russell Monroe mentioned earlier, and how they clean them up and put them on the suit and tie and made them have dignity. These things, the co-option, the glamorization of gangsterism, separation from the most advanced elements, indoctrination and reliance on passive approaches, raw fear and guilt, these things, we got to find a way. And many of those things are being worked on. You know, training is what you have to. So you have to go into it. How do you stop raw fear? Training, right? That's the only way to stop, you know, from being afraid. Once that training kicks in and you see how you're part of a cohesive unit and you all going in there together, then that camaraderie takes away one's fear. That's the formula. That's how that works. So we have to go into all of these things and find these ways and techniques and strategies to bring our youth into the movement. I think that should be one of the most important things that we should be working on in regards to strategizing as a liberation organization.
That's interesting when you said that, because, you know, being in the party, we get certain people that might come in political and have other other skills that might be more studious, you know, intellectual. And, you know, it's a handful of folks that come in, even though they know they joined the Black Panther Party, they're like, oh, I don't really do guns. And when they say that, what I hear is a fear, you know, or also it's like it's been a cultural thing. You know, the Black community, unfortunately, you know, pushes it passive, you know, as to equate having guns as if it is like the violence, and it doesn't. It relates to self-defense. But what I do find is those same brothers and sisters that are so timid and everything, but when we get them on the field, and like you say, when the camaraderie is on and they learn to use the weapon, you know, and get not only to use it, but to become marksmen and get comfortable, then they become some of the most, you know, gun savvy individuals. And it's about breaking that fear, making it common, making it practical, making it a way of life, you know. So yeah, but also engaging in what we do require before you can even set foot in a range or place a weapon is political education, you know. And that is key. You know, like what you're doing now, if you make folks aware, you know, we make it, you know, we're going to have to push. I'm saying this another year coming up, 2022, you know, all these things are taking place, the pandemic and all of that. But certain basic things still have to be done. The work has to continue, you know, everyone. It doesn't matter if you are choosing to get on the front line or not. Every soul can go online and look up these organizations that are doing the work and support these organizations. But that is not enough. You know, we're going to be clear. We're putting it on the brothers and sisters that are listening to this broadcast and that are in support of the party, in support of the Keep Along News, that everyone needs to do something, period. You know, but for those who want to step up to the front and get more involved, Brother Termos, how, you know, folks say, okay, I dig what the brother was dropping. Like, how do we get more directly involved with the work, you know, with someone that we hear from on a weekly basis? How do folks, you know, get in contact with you? Do you have an email? Or how do you suggest that folks reach out to you that directly want to get involved? Of course, they could email us at mbpp.org,
right.
But is there a direct line for you, and is there a way that folks can support the work that you're doing?
Yes. You can email me at rbgmusicfestival@gmail.com. That is the email for the organizations I have, Free Them All, Political Prisoners Liberation Campaign, which is a support campaign for different political prisoner defense committees. So what I do is I work very closely with the MOVE organization. It's been so awesome to watch those comrades come out, to have worked with them and then see them come home. Sekou and I work with Jericho. There's another organization called the New
the Northeast Political Prisoners Coalition. That's another political prisoner organization that I work with. You can also reach me at 443-962-777 and leave me a message. And let's see what we have coming up. Next year, the Comrades.
You read my mind.
Jericho.
I was about to ask what's some direct events coming up. That's perfect.
Yeah, next year, I know in January, the MOVE organization is having a commemoration of the radio career of Mumia Abu-Jamal, which is just awesome. Mumia is one of the greatest political analysis commentators that has ever existed in the history of the world. I mean, this guy was the head of the Black Journalists Association. I mean, just an awesome brother. So that will be a very great event, January the 18th, I believe, which will be in New York. Also coming up in Savannah in Georgia here, Imam Jamil Action Network is having a fish fry for him there in Savannah. Actually, that is in February the 12th. And so I'll put together a list of events. I'm looking here on the community calendar, and I'll put together a list of political prisoner events for the Comrades by next week.
Yes, sir. So, but what you mentioned thus far is we got January and February. Next year is just around the corner, brothers and sisters. Oh, my goodness. What did I just do?
Yeah.
Next year is less than 30 days away, you know, less than a month away. So there's plenty of time to get it on your calendar, and our brother will be laying it out. So we want to remind, we got a few callers, you know, this is the time to press one. I know a lot of times when we have a very heavy conversation, our audience, you know, chooses to, you know, get the knowledge. But we want to remind you, brothers and sisters, that this is the People's Radio, you know, the People's Radio. In our last moments, we got a few minutes, but I wanted to ask, did you have some news you wanted to kick to us? Or shall we play? We got a clip from Fred Hampton on political prison, which is 5 minutes, and then we have a clip
I was getting ready to mention Fred myself. Of course, we know the anniversary just went by, December the 4th, 1969, 4 a.m., police authorities of the Hanrahan Police Force in Chicago and FBI. 5 black agents and 8 white ones murdered that brother. 9 white ones. It was 14 all in together. With such precise layout of the apartment, they could take that machine gun and spray that brother and walk them bullets past his pregnant wife in the bed next to him. Shout out to the spirit of Fred Hampton. That bold, courageous captain. Imagine if we had Fred here now. What's going on in Chicago? Chicago has such a power, but the spirits that are there underneath that place contain such negative energy by the genocide of the indigenous people and the genocide of African people in that city that was established by a black man. Shout out to the spirit of Fred Hampton, and shout out to the work of his son, my comrade Fred Hampton Jr. So you say you got something for Fred that go about 5 minutes?
5 minutes. I got a 5 minute clip from Fred and an 8 minute clip from Asada talking about political prisoners. And if you don't mind, I will play them and then have you close us out from there.
Okay, let's do it.
Let's do it.
There ain't nothing to it. And I want to thank all of you.
Yes, I think I'm breathing.
No more questions, Officer John. God help you.
So we say, we always say to Black Panther Party that they can do anything they want to us. We might not be back. I might be in jail. I might be anywhere. But when I leave, you can remember I said with the last words on my lips that I am a revolutionary. And you're going to have to keep on saying that. You're going to have to say that I am a proletarian. I am the people. I'm not the pig. You've got to make a distinction. And the people are going to have to attack the pig. The people are going to have to stand up against the pig. That's what the Panthers are doing. That's what the Panthers are doing all over the world.
We have brought to trial here Fred Hampton. You are here to judge between two conflicting testimonies. Somebody is lying. Now, reason stands.
That reason is very clear here. That Private Jones, who had come from Sanford, North Carolina, would have no great desire to see Fred Hampton up in this trial. But Fred Hampton, a key figure in this community, has great reason for not wanting to be put in jail.
But the state's attorney and the state's attorney's office has reason to see Fred Hampton in jail. We've got a new state's attorney, you see. And he said already what he thought about people that had different political beliefs than he had. His speeches sound somewhat like those of Hitler. And we know why he wants to see Fred Hampton put in jail. Why do I have a lot of arrests? Because of harassment. Why is that harassment? Because the people that harassed me have set up a problem that made me disagree with them violently, and they set up this problem in order to exploit me and other people like me. And why they want to get rid of me, because I'm saying something that might wake up some other exploited people and some other oppressed people, and if all these people ever get together, then these pigs that are exploiting us, we'll be able to run them into the lake. That's why they want to get rid of us. And it's just, it's sort of like a primary thing with me. I'm the first move that they'll make. I'm a part of an organization. It would be the first organization they'll move on, because I happen to be a part of an organization, the Black Panther Party, that is the only organization, in fact, that has came out and stood up loud and clear and said that we don't care what anybody says, whether they have guns or not, and badges or 18 uniforms, if whenever they step outside the bounds of legality into the bounds of illegality, then we'll blow their brains out if they're bothering the people. Right. And what makes them mad about that? They're constantly bothering the people. Anybody that's out there for the protection of the people happens to be in direct conflict with them. What makes them mad about it? What makes them mad about it is that they have black people and white poor people and red poor people and Puerto Rican poor people and Latin American Puerto Rican people poor people of all descent. They have them caught up in their movements based on racism when the Black Panther Party stood up and said that we don't care what anybody says. We don't think you fight fire with fire best. We think you fight fire with water best. We're going to fight racism, not with racism, but we're going to fight with solidarity. We said we're not going to fight capitalism with black capitalism, but we're going to fight with socialism. We stood up and said we're not going to fight reactionary pigs and reactionary state attorneys like this and reactionary state attorneys like Hanrahan with any other reactions on our part. We're going to fight their reactions with all of us people to get together and have an international proletarian revolution.
Right on.
And that's saying all power to the people.
Right on.
That's saying that no matter what color you are, there's only two classes. And that's saying there's a class over here and there's a class over there. And the reason is this class over here has never did anything to get this class off its back, because this is lower, this is upper. This is the oppressed, this is the oppressor. This is the exploited, this is the exploiter. And these people in this class have divided themselves. They say, I'm black and I hate white people. I'm white and I hate black people. I'm Latin American and I hate hillbillies. I'm hillbillies and I hate Indians. So we're fighting amongst each other. And you've heard the testimony of pigs here, and you got pigs of all colors, you know that. You got pigs that are white, you got pigs that are black, you even got pigs that are black and white. Propagating the same type of madness that this buffoon Hanrahan would be propagating if he were here himself. And why? Because they want to keep you to believing that I'm your enemy, and that everybody else that's black and that wears a lot of hair on his head and hair on his face, they want to keep you thinking that he's your enemy. Why? Because if ever you would disregard him and overlook him just for a minute and throw away that question of racism and start into dealing with a little logic, then there would be no one else you could attack other than Hanrahan, other than Daley, and other than Tricky Dickie Nixon. If you make the right decision, then the oppressed people of the world will get complete satisfaction. I know you return a verdict of not guilty. Thank you.
Black Power. That was Chairman Fred Hampton Jr. I'm looking at the time here. We got about 5 more minutes left into the segment. We're going to ask our audience to extend us an additional 8 minutes to hear from Queen Assata Shakur on political prisoners, Black Power.
Evelyn Williams, who's also my lawyer, finally got a court order to come to see me, and since I could not tell her the extent of what was happening, I told her, please do something, because I was accused of killing a New Jersey state trooper, and New Jersey state troopers were quote-unquote guarding me, and guarding me consisted at that time of sticking things into my wounds, putting powder in my eyes that blinded me, and saying that if I did not tell them what they wanted to know, I would never see again, and some other things that I just never talked about. And I don't really want to get into that now because it will make me remember too vividly that period. But anyway, based on demonstrations outside of the hospital, I was transferred to another hospital, and the New Jersey State Troopers were replaced by some other guards. They weren't much better, but at least they did not attack me physically. I altogether spent 6.5 years in prison. I was accused of many things. I was acquitted on all charges except for the New Jersey charge, where I was accused of aiding and abetting in the murder of a New Jersey state trooper. I was tried by an all-white jury in a county where more than 70% of the people based on a jury project study were already prejudiced and thought I was guilty. It was a legal lynching, and I'm actually ashamed of even participating in that. I actually just stayed in the cell and said, y'all do whatever you want, because it wasn't a trial. It was a lynching. I was sentenced to life plus 30 years, plus 30 days. I spent more than 2.5 years in solitary confinement in men's prisons. And in 1979, with the help of many people, many of my comrades, I was able to escape from prison, and there was no other possible alternative. There was no such thing as an appeal. My aunt was very frustrated. She was doing the appeal, and parts of the transcript disappeared, the evidence disappeared, and so there was no such thing, no such possibility of ever receiving justice in the courts of the United States. I still believe that there is no justice in the United States, and I still believe that more and more the court system and the criminal justice system is a criminal system and will serve as a conveyor belt for poor people, for African people, for Latino people, for all oppressed people. I don't want this really to be a run-on sentence. I would like to have more of a dialogue, if that's cool with everybody. Is that cool with everybody? And so I've said a little bit about myself. I don't want to do a speech and tell you what you're already aware of. So I'd rather really address myself to talking about things that you're interested in, whether it has to do with me, whether it has to do with Cuba, whether it has to do with our struggle, or whatever you'd like to ask about.
Limit the amount of speaking and do more questioning. Are we agreed? Okay. Monica.
What are your feelings on the impact of Geronimo Pratt being released from prison after 27 years, incarcerated? What type of impact do you think his, release will have on the struggle against racism and repression in the United States?
Well, I believe that Geronimo is an amazingly strong human being who has suffered, I mean, in an unspeakable way. I mean, 9 years in solitary confinement. I mean, Geronimo has withstood things that, it's amazing that a human being can withstand. And he has left that prison after 27 years with his head held high and being committed to the liberation of African people and all oppressed people. And so I think that his presence, his words, his experiences are of infinite value to people who are interested in making, building social justice in the United States. I think that his release is a definite victory for all people. When I think about it, even though I'm clear that his release is a victory, I mean, they knew for, years and years and years that he was framed. It was obvious. Everybody from 60 Minutes to whoever talked about how he was framed by the FBI. I mean, and they talked about it 10 years ago. So the fact that he remained in prison for 27 years still it was just absolute rage and, indignation. But I think that that is the price that one pays when one becomes an example of resistance. Anybody who becomes an example of resistance to the vicious system that exists in the United States must expect to be targeted. During slavery, they cut off the heads of slaves and they put them on lamp posts. And today, even though it is totally obvious that people are innocent, were victimized by COINTELPRO, even though they talked about the Freedom of Information Act and they said, yeah, we did it. You know, we targeted people. We tried to destroy people, but they have never once admitted to and said, we tried to put Sun Diata in prison for, every minute of his political activism. They never said, we're trying to kill Mumia. They never, I mean, it has been a meaningless freedom of information because really what they give you is a million pieces of paper with all the lines blacked out. So what kind of freedom of information is that? You know, I think that it is important, the case of Geronimo.
It cut off. Black power. It cut out,
Black
but enough to say it. So
right.
Your closing comments, brother. And we thank you, for having this direct and much needed dialogue and bringing this to the world stage on the New Black Panther Radio. So we would ask for your closing comments. And we want to put this on everybody's mind. You know, let's do the work. TheJerichoMovement.com, FreeMaroonNow.com.
Now. Mm-hmm.
Now, FreeMaroonNow.com. But my closing statement is go to MBPP.org, support, and then join. But the closing words go to Tutmos, Black Power.
Black Power.
Black Power. Yes. And pick up a copy of Maroon the Implacable. You can find it on Amazon, the collected writings of Russell Maroon Schultz, and study liberation of gangsterism and black fighting formations. Look forward to revolution, African people, and stay vigilant. This has been your combat reporter, Brother Tutmosis Sankara, here on Al Kibalan News. See you next week.